January 6th, 2021 did not start like any other day. This was not a day where disaster sprang out of the blue.
We will not take it anymore, and that's what this is all about.
No, instead it was more of a day of increasing dread, this kind of slow dawning realization that the stuff you might have vaguely worried about over the years was now reaching its full, violent potential.
We are getting alerts from inside the Capitol right now that the Capitol has been breached.
They said they wanted to stand by the president. They wanted to help him fight.
We are at war. Even if it kills you, remain a free man.
It's just some of the sound from that day as a mob tried to overturn election results through sheer force. But at this point, you know what that violence sounded like, right? That is no mystery. What is still less clear is exactly who was responsible and how. That is what we're going to focus on today. What led to one of America's darkest days, what we've learned since, and what questions still have yet to be answered. This is a special edition of Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey, and it's Thursday, January 6th. Now, there's been a lot of rewriting history over the last year, so let's just remind ourselves what this was. January 6th was always scheduled to be the day each state submitted its verified, governor-approved election results to Congress. Their electoral votes had been tallied, affirmed, but President Trump refused to accept those results and said they shouldn't be recognized. Shortly after he spoke at a rally, some of his most radical supporters had charged across the Washington Mall and smashed their way into the Capitol. What stuck out here was, as chaotic as this was, it wasn't random. Those at the front of the crowd seemed to know exactly what they wanted to do, which doors they wanted to break down. It was as if some of them had been training for a day like this. In the months that followed, we learned that dozens of those on hand had connections to militia groups. And for the last year, ABC's investigative unit has been tracing how members of those groups were primed for this moment unlike any other in recent history. So this morning, we got ABC's Mike Levine, who covers domestic terrorism for our investigative unit, and Jason Van Tatenhove, a former spokesman for the Oath Keepers militia group. And Mike, let's start with you, because you've said for a while now that January 6th was not necessarily just about the idea of a stolen election, that there was a lot more happening. What do you mean? Like, what brought us here?
So we talk about January 6th and how these claims of a stolen election played into it. But you just have to look at the crowd that day to really see that there was a lot more to it. You know, signs of QAnon and other conspiracy theories, symbols of organized anti-government militia groups, you know, groups like Oath Keepers, who talk about stepping in when the government oversteps its bounds.
I can see what I believe are probably the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys within the crowd and forming groups. They do have communications.
And if you look back at the last decade or so, there are specific moments during the Obama administration and the Trump administration where you can see how these types of groups came to feel that they could get the government to back down, you know, and how maybe one day they could try to take over the Capitol.
To protect the Constitution of the United States against enemies foreign and domestic!
It's that rhetoric that you see work its way through to January 6th.
And Jason, let's start there. Can you just describe what the Oath Keepers are and how you found yourself involved with a militia group?
Yeah, you have to understand. So the Oath Keepers kind of evolved over time. Initially, they kind of started off as kind of an educational outreach about constitutional rights. And right now, I would consider it one of the largest, you know, organized, I guess you could say organized militias out there. I kind of got plugged in. I had moved up to Montana from Colorado. I'm from Colorado, and I was associate editor for the Oath Keepers website.
Hey guys, Jason Van Tatenhove of Oath Keepers here. Have another important story coming to you out of Texas this time.
Producing articles and videos every week. I would go out to these standoffs and cover them. And in essence, I became a propagandist for them.
We're seeing our rights infringed upon more and more by an out-of-control federal agency that are making up laws as they go in really an unconstitutional way.
The Oath Keepers was not really a household name at that point. It was something that you would see on InfoWars.
The police and military are not bad people. They're brainwashed, just like the general public. If we can reach out to them, through the Oath Keepers and other groups, we can short circuit this entire behemoth.
And so we hear about this organic uprising happening out in this ranch in Nevada, in the desert of Nevada. So I made some calls to see if I could get, you know, go out there and get embedded somehow and cover some of the events that were happening, because it was this historical event that was unfolding.
Tape of a real Wild West showdown. Federal agents clashing with protesters, some from armed militia groups.
Yeah, Mike, put that in context for us. What was unfolding in Nevada?
Less than a decade ago, 7 years ago, there was an incident in Bunkerville, Nevada, at the Bundy Ranch, that really changed how militia groups and anti-government activists reacted and responded to some of these incidents.
On the surface, it's all about cows. The Bureau of Land Management is removing cattle owned by rancher Cliven Bundy because they say he, quote, owes the American people in excess of $1 million.
Federal agents went and seized cattle from the Bundy Ranch.
Now we're going to go and take our land back and declare freedom and liberty here in this land.
When that happened, Cliven Bundy, the patriarch of the family, called for help from militia groups, from basically anyone that he described as battle ready. He said that there was going to be a range war. He wanted help. And militias and other groups from around the country came.
And all the credit in the world goes to the Bundy family for taking a stand that others around here would not take.
They had it arranged that I was going to be going down to Bundy Ranch with Stuart Rhodes in his vehicle. And kind of be attached.
Who's Stuart Rhodes again? Can you just remind me?
Stuart Rhodes is the president and founder of the Oath Keepers. He basically is the Oath Keepers. He's was a Yale-educated attorney, used to be a staffer for Ron Paul.
What we are seeing here is a combined arms effort.
He's the one who initially created the Oath Keepers and is in charge of it to this day.
There was one day, April 12th, 2014, where federal agents and the Bundys and their supporters really came face to face.
Who's the aggressor here? Who's the aggressor?
Let it go.
You had guns pointed at the federal agents. You had agents with their weapons pointed at the militias and others. And ultimately, the government decided to back down because they didn't want any bloodshed. And that, to the militia groups, was a triumph. It was a victory.
It was very much a victorious moment. And, you know, there are videos that I had shot working for the Oath Keepers where I'm saying just that.
Many of you, like me, were at Bundy Ranch or were very inspired by the actions that happened at Bundy Ranch.
We have a victory. The family did not get shot. You know, they even got their cattle back. You know, I didn't really give a shit about the cattle. There were rumors of that there were sniper teams out in the hills. And people were really worried about seeing another Ruby Ridge, another Waco.
So, okay, then if Bundy Ranch 2014 is this seminal moment, Mike, what happens next?
Well, there were a lot of standoffs that happened. Not all of them made headlines. But the next one that makes headlines is in early 2016, almost a year and a half after Bunkerville.
Mr. Bundy, let me ask you. The County Sheriff David Ward has called your group's actions an attempt to overthrow the county and federal government to spark a movement across the United States. Is he right?
Absolutely not. He's ignored the people. We have worked with him for several months now, trying to get him to stand and make a stand for these the Hammonds.
Ammon Bundy hears about two ranchers in Oregon who had set fires to federal land and were now being sent back to prison.
The attorneys for the men, who already served some time for this conviction but were released, claimed they set the fires to prevent an invasive species of plant from growing on their land.
We love you! We support you!
And Ammon Bundy, he thinks that the ranchers are basically being abused by the federal government and the government is overreaching once again.
The FBI is now stepping in, hoping for a peaceful ending to this tense Oregon standoff, where openly armed militiamen calling themselves Citizens for Constitutional Freedom have taken over a federal wildlife refuge led by Ammon Bundy.
The ranchers themselves tell Bundy they don't want his help, but he does it anyway. And again, militia groups, anti-government activists from around the country come to back Ammon Bundy against the federal government.
I am
100% willing to lay my life down to fight against tyranny.
That takeover lasts several weeks, and it really starts to come to a close after one of Ammon Bundy's spokesmen, Lavoy Finicum, is killed by law enforcement.
Lavoy Finicum, as they have murdered him, cold-blooded murdered him.
We want justice, we want accountability for the murder of Lavoy Finicum.
Finicum being killed is really another example to these groups of government overreach. And Finicum becomes a martyr of sorts to the right wing and to the militia movement.
Well, and Jason, here's the question I keep going to is, so many members of these groups are former police, former military. These groups are often the ones talking about respect for the flag, respect for the badge. But like when you're there in Oregon or in Nevada, police and law enforcement are telling people to leave. These guys are just saying no, like to the badge, to the uniforms. How do they square that?
That ties kind of into this whole deep state conspiracy notion that, you know, there are these other players involved in the deep state that are trying to take over the country and therefore delegitimizes the standing government that is there now. The Oath Keepers on their website have a kind of a manifesto that these are the orders we will not follow.
Every service member has an obligation, not just that they can refuse a legal order or an unlawful order, they have an obligation to. They have to. And so they have to make a decision for themselves where that line is.
So you can be a former cop or a former Marine or something, be proud of that, but still say these cops and these federal agents are here for the wrong reasons. They if they were actually following the Constitution, they wouldn't do this to me.
Yes. Yes. That very much kind of explains a lot of the mentality, at least in the earlier days.
And they're called the Oath Keepers because from Stuart Rhodes's viewpoint and from their viewpoint, they need to uphold their oath, right? That they took an oath to defend the Constitution. And this, you know, whatever this next thing is their next chance to uphold their oath.
OK, so Bundy Ranch happens. The thing in Oregon happens. Lots of standoffs along the way, all seen as victories by these groups, especially during an Obama administration. So at this point, we're in 2016. How does the story shift then as President Trump takes office?
So Donald Trump takes over the White House in early 2017.
We are going to drain the swamp of corruption in Washington, D.C.
And of course, he brings with him this anti-government rhetoric, this anti-immigrant rhetoric.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
And in a way, experts say, that tells the militia groups, the white supremacists, the far right, that they can be a little more vocal, that they can step out a little more. Because they had sort of been diminished in the years before.
You will not replace us! You will not replace
Just a few months later, in Charlottesville with the Unite the Right rally, when you saw white supremacists and other far right groups.
Images of Fields marching with Vanguard America, a known white supremacist group. Chanting a message of white power just before that fatal ramming.
Experts say that this was really a turning point in America because for the first time in a while, these groups felt empowered to really step out and be public.
The nationalist community defended ourselves against thugs in a battle that was brought by this city that wanted a bloodbath.
And getting support from President Trump, right? Like, even if you lose the battle, you've got the commander-in-chief on your side. Jason, you had left the group around this point, right? Why? What was it that made you go?
You know, I was really beginning to open my eyes to what things really were, and I just didn't want to be involved with it anymore. I remember walking into a little deli at the local supermarket where kind of the leadership, it was their community where they lived. And I remember hearing a group of people, and this is, you know, business owners, people that, you know, have their lives squared away, and you know, members of the community, and they were sitting there talking openly about how the Holocaust wasn't real. And my jaw just dropped. I couldn't believe that this was actually coming out of someone's mouth in a public setting like this. And it really, to me, that was just it. I couldn't do it. And just, you know, I just felt like I had to do some sort of self-imposed penance to make up for what I was doing with the Oath Keepers. So, you know, I started doing Wildland Fire, EMS, and search and rescue.
So what, Mike, what happens next then? Because that's still, Charlottesville is 2017, right? We're still several years ago.
Yes, I mean, but obviously with all of us, what really changes everything, what really pushes everything into overdrive is what happens in 2020.
Fast-moving developments in this coronavirus emergency.
Several thousand people have been told to self-quarantine.
When the pandemic hits, people like Ammon Bundy are really upset about what state governments are doing to stop the pandemic.
What they put in your body, what they force you to put on your body, how they force you to act.
The measures they're taking, the mask mandates, the lockdowns, the stay-at-home orders.
Oh, this is like fresh fuel.
Yes.
And I don't know how long it will be, but it is going to be a terrible battle. A battle of who has the right to control you.
And Ammon Bundy launches a network, a new organization that he calls People's Rights, to help sort of organize and mobilize these protests against COVID measures.
They're congregating in ways that health experts have said they should not.
No, these are people expressing their views. I see where they are and I see the way they're working.
Trump almost feeds the fire when he starts tweeting things like liberate Michigan, liberate Virginia.
Angry protesters, some of them armed, spilling into the Capitol in Michigan, demanding the country reopen.
And then within a couple months of that, Ammon Bundy was with a mob that went into the state capitol in Idaho.
Ammon Bundy carried out of the Capitol after refusing to leave a chair when the auditorium was ordered cleared.
And the video there is just, it is eerily similar to some of the images that have come out of January 6th. COVID really put fuel on this fire of the anti-government sentiment, but then comes Election Day.
We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list, okay?
Trump had been seeding for months, maybe even years, this idea that elections are rigged, that you can't trust the votes. And when Biden is then projected as the winner, this is a stolen election.
Hello, Georgia, by the way. There's no way we lost Georgia. There's no way. That was a rigged election.
And now you have the anger over the mask mandates, right, that has been building. You have the anti-government sentiment that has been building for years from Bunkerville.
I just wanted to express my support for what is happening in Washington, D.C. on January 6th.
All of that collides and just keeps building and building until January 6th.
Well, my question to you, though, Mike, is, okay, January 6th happens. Since then, we've seen like 700 people charged with crimes. Well, only 60-something have alleged ties to these types of militia groups, right? Barely 20 people have described themselves as members of militia groups. This is out of 700 people. So how can you say, if it were not for these events over the last 10 years, that we might not have seen what we saw on that day?
The story of the Oath Keepers and the story of these standoffs from several years ago is about the rhetoric that it produced and the escalation of tensions that came out of that over the years. That's the connection. It's not that that all of the people involved in January 6th were tied to the Oath Keepers, because they were not. But what was true is that January 6th was largely based, in addition to the idea of a stolen election, it was also based on anti-government sentiment.
And that ties directly back to the Oath Keepers, to InfoWars. You have to understand, all of these groups, their numbers are vastly inflated. You know, on some of these smaller standoffs that happened kind of between Bundy Ranch and what happened last year, you're lucky if you get a dozen people that are actual members showing up. But what they're really good at is that whole optics side of things. They're good at the propaganda. They're good at working the internet.
All through People's Rights, everything that we've done, we've never been violent. We've always tried to expose what is happening and educate the best we can.
Where the masses do tune in and they get worked up and they get inspired to go do stupid shit.
About the rhetoric, again, it's not that these people necessarily directly inspired what happened on January 6th. It's that they inspired the rhetoric that then played a part in it. One of those things is that a woman who allegedly went inside the Capitol on January 6th was, according to the FBI, recorded the night before at an Alex Jones event saying that they should go to the Capitol the next day and go inside the Capitol, just like she did in Boise months earlier. And she said, wow. She said, quote, "I'm with People's Rights, Ammon Bundy."
As for you personally, Jason, I mean, if like Mike has just told us about how there's this line that goes from, you know, years ago till now, if you see that line as well, and it sounds like you do, Do you feel responsible in a small way then for what happened after your time with this group?
Yes, absolutely I do. And I've just got to own that. With my own soul searching, I've got to own that. But always wanted to just disassociate my name from the movement. But at this point, I feel like I've got to stand up with my name behind it and say, look, this is dangerous. This is scary. And here's why. I think we're so, so lucky that blood hadn't been shed really up until the point of Lavoie Finicum getting shot and killed. I begged Lavoie to get out of there.
But that kind of leads to, just to bring it back to like what your role you think is now. You didn't reach him. Are people reachable in these groups right now?
I think people like me who kind of got washed up in it. I have a mohawk. I've got tattoos on my face. I've been a consummate rebel my whole life. Hmm. And what's the biggest way to rebel is rebel against the government. But I'm also a thinking individual, human being that can look back at past actions and say, you know what? I had that totally wrong. And, and being able to showcase, like, it's not the leadership. It's not the guys that are getting y'all wound up that are getting in trouble for this. It's the people that go out and listen to them and begin to engage in these activities that their lives are ruined. And they're the ones who are having blood shed, and they're the ones who are spilling blood. So if I can reach just a few people that are like myself that, may entertain these beliefs, but could be talked away from the edge, then that's what I'm going to try to do.
All right, Jason Van Tatenhove, Mike Levine from ABC's Investigative Unit. You'll actually see both of them in this special documentary that is streaming on Hulu right now. It'll be up on ABC News Live tonight. It's called Homegrown: Standoff to Rebellion. Thank you both.
Thank you, guys.
We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
These people
are so we talked about how everyone arrived at this moment on January 6th, but what happens next? I want to quickly bring in Mary McCord from Georgetown Law. She actually runs Georgetown's Institute for Constitutional Advocacy and Protection. And Mary, it's been a year, and yet there are still questions that are kind of unanswered. Like, we still don't even know who planted a couple pipe bombs on the day. So I'm wondering, as you look at this, what questions are you still searching for answers for? Like, what do you find the most significant?
Well, I think, one of the things that many of us are very interested in is where the investigations are going to go. That's the Department of Justice investigation, certainly as well as the Congressional House Select Committee investigation.
We have arrested and charged more than 725 defendants
in nearly all 50 states and the District of Columbia.
But on the DOJ side, you know, we've seen a massive effort to prosecute those who were physically at the assault on the Capitol, those who assaulted police officers, those who violently broke into the Capitol, delayed the counting of the Electoral College votes.
Whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible for the assault on our democracy, we will follow the facts wherever they lead.
I would like to see where that is leading to. Who was also responsible? Who was a facilitator? Who was an aider and abettor? Who incited that? Who maybe wasn't there on the ground that day, maybe didn't physically assault anybody, but still played a part?
Let's have trial by combat.
Our country has been under siege for a long time.
He could have told them to stand down. He could have told them to go home. And he failed to do so.
And to be clear, I do not think one single overarching conspiracy is going to come out of this with a mastermind who planned the whole thing. I don't think that's how this worked. But even in cases where you have multiple conspiracies coming together, there are usually people higher up the food chain that had a role to play and should be held accountable.
Who does that include? Because we, you know, we've heard speculation that has never actually been fully demonstrated, this idea of whether there were lawmakers or officials who might have known more about this. Are those the kind of people you're talking about?
I mean, it could include a variety of different individuals. It could be include people who provided funding for, you know, transportation to D.C. or for hotels or for equipment, knowing of the intent to actually, you know, physically and violently assault the Capitol.
Well, providing a bus is not a problem, but it is if you're like providing a bus so that people can go invade a Capitol.
Exactly. It could be inciting this through, you know, using different connections of people to incite this or conspire with others to do this.
The leader of the committee investigating the insurrection says the attack was likely a coordinated effort.
It could be people in the executive branch, could be people in the Department of Defense, some state characters, some nonprofits, and some very wealthy individuals.
And some of these things may not end up being criminal, but it would be good to know where it started.
I hope that everybody else who is called to cooperate will cooperate, and that everybody will be held accountable, including, by the way, any members of Congress who knowingly participated or coordinated with this dangerous mob.
Tracking down where accountability needs to be, you know, brought forth, educating the public about what happened, I think is important.
Well, so that a year later, as you look at this, could this be worse somehow going forward? I mean, 2025, January 6th, there is another scheduled date by Congress to review electoral results. Could we see something like this again?
I don't think we're going to see anything like that at the Capitol again. And the reason is because, you know, even before these congressional investigations, there was, you know, General Russell Honoré came in with a team. In fact, I was part of this team. I was on the legal aspect of this team to sort of evaluate the safety of the Capitol, what needed to change.
A blueprint for operational planning has been created and put into place for all future significant events. If January 6th taught us anything, it's that preparation matters.
Better intelligence sharing, better simply fortifications, right? The ability to get fencing up in a, you know, quickly. But what we've seen, and the data shows this, and so we're seeing political violence and intimidation on a much more diffuse basis across the country in, you know, pockets and areas and used in ways that are equally threatening to democracy, but just look different. It also leads to an incredibly troubling set of actions that's being taken at the local and state level right now across the country.
Citizens who protect our right to vote are fundamentally protecting our democracy, and so we have to protect them.
Threatening election officials, including, you know, Republican election officials who refuse to capitulate to the Stop the Steal election deniers.
And even if you cut them in half, cut them in half, and cut them in half again, it's more votes than we need.
Well, Mr. President, the challenge that you have
is the data you have is wrong.
You know, there are efforts afoot to replace people, even at the local level, all the way up through the state level, with election deniers.
Like the people that literally sort of count the votes and run the election, run the show on the day.
Yes, yes. Hmm. You know, and I think Steve Bannon has talked about this effort pretty openly and pretty publicly.
We're taking over school boards. We're taking over the Republican Party through the precinct committee strategy. We're taking over all the elections.
If you are putting people into those positions, or people are running for those positions who are coming in with such an incredible bias against one party and open to the idea of just refusing to certify the vote, then you are really going to muck up the system. I think voting rights legislation is very, very important, and combating voter suppression is very important. But equally important is ensuring that those who are in those positions that shouldn't be political at all are going to fulfill their responsibility and not be part of this machine right now of lies and disinformation about stolen elections and fraud that does not exist on a systematic level.
Right, because what you had on January 6th in reality was a fringe movement saying that drastic measures needed to be taken to right, you know, this imagined wrong about the election results. It gets a lot scarier when big swaths of the country are all disagreeing on who the actual president is. Mary McCord from Georgetown, thanks so much.
Thank you, Fred.
And that will do it for us. A lot of remembrances, a lot of emotion, a lot of events happening on Capitol Hill today. One scheduled event that is not happening: President Trump has canceled remarks he was planning on giving today at Mar-a-Lago in Florida. We'll break down all of this along with the other stories driving the day tomorrow morning. I'm Brad Milkey. See you then.